Hi, this is James Woodcott from jameswoodcott.co.uk, and here with me I have a couple of developers from 360voice.com. I have Trapper Markels, I hope I've pronounced that correctly. Welcome to the show.
Yep, you have.
And also Steve Sarp.
Hello.
So for anyone who hasn't been to 360voice.com, what is the site about?
It's a site that you register with your gamer tag, your Xbox 360 gamer tag, and when you do, in a few days, the site will record what you play each day, and it'll actually create a blog about what you play automatically. So you don't have to do, once you register, there's no interaction. It just starts itself up, and you wait a couple of days, and you're good to go. And it's kind of humorous, kind of silly, but I don't know, Chapter, do you have anything to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just really about taking the information that your Xbox is generating and allowing it to create a blog that you can read, or you can subscribe via RSS to your friends' blogs. And so every single day you'll get, you know, some information delivered to you directly about what they've been playing, what Gabe's been playing, what achievements they got. So it's just kind of a fun conversational way of getting access to some of that information.
So where did the idea for 360 Voice come from?
Well, it came from Steve and I. We both were kind of looking for something to do as part of the community developer program that Microsoft has for the Xbox platform. Steve had access to the data feeds that Microsoft publishes to generate gamer cards, and was doing some caching of that data and some reporting. I attended the eTech 2006, the O'Reilly Emerging Technologies Conference, where the keynote speaker, Bruce Sterling, gave a talk about Blogjix and about how we're going to be approaching this future where our objects have all these sensors and information that they're gathering about their environment. And he was kind of joking, saying that, you know, any grad student could come up with an idea to create a Blogjix and get a grant for it. And you know, I'm not a grad student, but I started looking at the devices I interact with and say, you know, what would make a good Blogjix? Like, it would just be fun to make one. And Steve, you know, kind of said, hey, I already have all this data, and it just was kind of a natural fit that we could massage that into, an actual conversational output, which is a blog for the Xbox.
So how long did it actually take to develop the website?
Well, I think the first iteration, it took, you know, maybe 2 days, and we got a quick import built, and we got, you know, a quick and dirty just kind of front end that we threw up there. I mean, it didn't have blogs or RSS or anything, but it at least kind of created a conversational entry that kind of, it's more of a proof of concept. And after that was kind of picked up, it got picked up by like a couple of high profile blogs and things like that. And there was a lot of really positive buzz. So then we were very motivated to jump forward and build out the pretty much, you know, everything as it exists today. I mean, we've done a lot of enhancing since then, but for the most part, we added the blog, the RSS, all of the nightly jobs that process the data and bring it in, and sequentially, you know, build the blog entries. So we built all that. Probably, I'd say about 3 days of time before we started coding to when the domain was live and the site was up.
And that's not bad going, really, is it?
No, it went pretty fast, actually. I mean, we're kind of paying the price now for some of that speed, I think, but so it goes.
Yes, you have been having a few server issues on that at the minute, haven't you?
Yeah, we're just fighting growth, you know, and it's kind of one of those things that when we first built it, we coded it to work for maybe 10 blogs tops. I mean, you know, how many did we have in there in the beginning, Steve? I think it was like...
Yeah, we were testing it with about 10 or 12.
Yeah, so we had the jobs going, you know, for 10 or 12, and then it kind of got out, and then we got up to, you know, a couple hundred, a couple thousand, and, you know, got up to 10,000, and everything. And our code was just the original code that we'd run it on for 8 people. You know, we just quick and dirty pounded it out in 3 days. So we're kind of paying the price for that now that we're up in the 30,000 range. You know, little mistakes start to add up at that number of entries. So we're really having to go back from scratch and look at every query we run, every logical loop we process, and make sure that we're doing it as efficiently as possible so that we can get these out on time.
So of the 360 Voice website itself, then, which part of it do you work on each?
I do the back-end database imports and a lot of the processing to kind of parse the data out. And then Trapper, he was the original person that created all the sayings for the blog entries. and does all the CSS styling and all the front-end stuff that the users see.
And how difficult is it to register on the website to get this functionality?
It's pretty straightforward. If you go to the homepage, you know, 360voice.com, there's a registration form right on the front page there. And you just fill out your gamer tag, and you just fill out an email address, and you select a gender, and then you submit it. And then it'll take a couple of days, I mean, because we have to, you have to be submitted into the batch processing, which happens nightly. So the first night, it pulls all of your games, but it, you know, it has to skip the first day, because if you processed on the first day, it would think you played all 16 of those games that are in your gamer card. It would think you played them that day. So there's just no good way to know, you know, what did you play or what didn't you play, and at the same time fill the table with all the games and do everything else we need to do to get everything set up. So we just kind of skip the first day. It's just kind of the easiest way to go. And then the next day, we look at the first day and we see what's happened. And then that's what we do every single day from then, is we just look, compare the previous day to the current day, see what's changed, write a blog about it.
So you've got this great site. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I remember when I first saw it, I thought, this is really clever stuff, but how am I going to incorporate into my website to work for me? So how would you recommend to other people who sort of have the same sort of question of how to integrate that information to share with people?
Yeah, I mean, there's two primary ways. The one way is that, you know, it's RSS. So, you know, if you have any sort of gadget or anything that takes an RSS feed, you can just pull the RSS feed directly into the gadget or into your site. So, you know, the primary way we've always envisioned people to consume this information, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of time reading their own blogs, but we always kind of envisioned it that it's not really so much your own blog that you're reading, it's the blogs of your friends, because, you know what you played, essentially. And yeah, it's fun for a while to get the little quips and to read about, you know, how your blog thinks your gaming experience is with its owner. But the real power is, you know, I'm subscribed to 10 different feeds from 10 different people, and I get to just see really quickly every morning, you know, what games they've played and what they've done. So the primary way to consume this stuff and to push it around is via RSS. There is also a badge. If you know, are on the site, you can go to the promo section, and there's a little JavaScript badge that you can put on your site, which shows, you know, the recent entries. So that's one way to do it as well. And then if you really want to get crazy, we do publish a set of XML web services. So we have an API that we're trying to document. It's very informal. It's, you know, it's just one of those things where it's tied to the stability of our site. So, you know, you got to be careful with how you use it, and, you know, not hit it too hard. But in the end, you can take that and make direct XML web service requests, get back blogs, get back gamer tiles, you know, get back lists of favorite games, all that stuff. So we're making that available to people so that they can integrate directly. And I also just want to add that we do have a kind of hidden web service, but, you know, if you have a really good idea and you want to integrate the creation of a blog with your website, so, you know, we have a couple of websites that are actually integrating so that if you register on their site, it'll automatically register you on ours. So, you know, Xbox Live Friends Finder is like that, Eurogamer's like that. So, you know, these sites are using a special registration API that we built for them. And if you're interested in something like that, you just have to email us, kind of explain how you want to use it, and then we'll set it up for you. But it's restricted because we don't want anybody just throwing stuff into our registration table, so we need to set up proper keys and everything like that. But that's available to people if they're really interested in going that far with it.
Yeah, that's excellent. I mean, you've already said you've got around 30,000 people using the facilities. Now you've moved server, what do you think that could actually go up to? What are the possibilities in the future for the site?
Well, our user base is pretty much anyone that has a 360 and can get on the internet. So we're basically looking at that. As that grows, I think our user base will grow. But, I mean, we don't expect it to ever get, you know, too large. Just because it is kind of still a niche thing. Like, not every Xbox owner is going to want a log of what they play.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, from a scalability perspective, that's why Steve and I are spending a lot of time right now just going back and looking at all the decisions we made for the import process, because at the end of the day, that's what essentially has to scale. So we're looking at a lot of different approaches for that. I mean, we're both learning a ton as we go here just to kind of get our hands around the technologies that we're using. And just around, I mean, neither of us have ever worked in an environment where we're dealing with this many users and this much data that we're having to process on a daily basis. So, you know, there's just a lot of, there's a big learning curve there that we're trying to come up on and really figure out. And I think if we can solve some of these issues and really get our processing times down, then we'll definitely be positioned to, you know, to continue to grow. And then we're also kind of, now that we've moved to a dedicated server and we have a hosting provider that allows us to do that, you know, we could always scale it out to multiple servers if we had the, you know, the financial revenue to do that, and we could just continue to grow it from there. So, you know, I think we're positioned pretty good right now. I think if we can get past these next couple of weeks where we're doing a lot of rewriting and get it really, really stable, we'll feel really good about where we're at.
Have you had any actual feedback from Microsoft themselves regarding the website?
Well, not in any official capacity. We're members of the Xbox Community Developers Program, and that's a really good program for community developers, and you can interact with other developers, but you can also interact with representatives from Microsoft that they set up. They set up some private stuff for us to interact with, and so we get some good feedback from that. And I'm also a Xbox MVP, and so I interact with my lead at Microsoft and some other people, as well as other Xbox MVPs, so we get some excellent feedback from that as well. So that's kind of the capacity we work with Microsoft in.
So Sony were going to do something similar, because we know very little about what they're going to offer network-wise, but if they ever did release the same sort of information that Microsoft's made available, can you ever see yourselves doing anything the same for the PS3?
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely possible. You know, it's just a matter of kind of where we want to concentrate, and we definitely can envision doing different types of blogs for different types of systems at some point. You know, there's only two of us, so it would be quite difficult to do the level of support and maintain the level of quality and functional enhancements that we want to do for the 360. It would also be difficult if, you know, if we decide not to buy PS3s. You know, so, you know, both Steve and I are Xbox gamers, and there's only so much, you know, for someone like me, maybe it's different for you, Steve, but for someone like me, you know, I only have so much time I can really devote to gaming, and my gaming is, you know, Xbox 360 at home and my Nintendo DS on the train. And outside of those two systems, I can't really see myself adding another system. But, you know, you, Steve, you have every game system ever invented, so maybe you would do it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that, you know, we both play on our Xboxes a lot, and that we kind of got live to kind of keep in touch, because we're both in different areas, and you know, all our friends play live, and so we're really dedicated. We play Xbox more than everything else. I own all the consoles, but we kind of concentrate on Xbox, and they're the ones providing the feeds and whatnot. I would say, since I own every other Sony console and own pretty much every console, that I would get a PS3. I'm just not getting right now because of the price and whatnot, but that's not really an issue. But yeah, I mean, I would say if we both have a PS3, we might start looking at they do the feeds. I'm just worried that they might not have an integrated live, like, online service. I screwed up and called it live there. online service, and I just don't think they'll probably head in that direction right away.
A lot of it, too, is just the feel of the environment. I mean, Microsoft is being so open with their community developer program. They're engaging the users. I mean, they have the MVP programs, and they have all these things that really sort of bring us into the fold with them. And so it would be very difficult to do something like this in an environment with Sony if they didn't also offer the same sort of support networks that they have in place. So, you know, it'd be one thing for them to allow to publish these feeds, but it's a whole other thing to sort of want to feel like you want to be a part of that corporate culture, and you want to be a part of that, you know, the PS3 and everything that they're trying to do with it. And, you know, from my perspective, I just have not felt that from Sony yet. So it'd be very difficult to commit to all the time and effort necessary to do this for the PS3, but, you know, who knows? You know, maybe they'll get their stuff together, and they'll provide a really compelling reason to do it, and something that, you know, that is geeky enough to get us just as excited as we've been about the 360 voice site. So I don't rule anything out.
So does that mean you both love the Xbox 360s then?
Yeah, we try and show him some love. Steve's much better. His Xbox loves him much more than mine loves me, as you can tell from his blog over my blog. But yeah, I mean, I got into the Xbox just because of Xbox Live. I'd never bought a console before. Steve had always been on consoles, and he kept telling me about the original Xbox and about this thing called Xbox Live and how you can play over the internet and talk and its voice, and it was enough to push me over. And I bought it, and it was great. And I mean, the only reason I bought the 360 was because the Xbox Live experience was so compelling for the original. And now on the 360, it's so much better. It's amazing what they're doing with this console, and they're allowing it. You know, they're doing things both for the console, but then they're doing stuff like this, making this information available outside their system so that developers can get at it and people can have fun with it. And so it's just a really, it's just a really exciting console, and it's been a lot of fun working on it.
I was just going to add that we just have to remember that it's less than a year old already, and they've already released that major dashboard update and so many, you know, different stuff on Live and the gamer score stats and the community developers program. It's growing so quickly and evolving that it's just like I haven't seen a console like this that, you know, has changed so dramatically in the first year, just from the initial games released to what we have now and just what they're doing with Live and the dashboard and whatnot. It's kind of an exciting console.
And what's so great is all that it seems to be a lot of it's user feedback, you know, like people really, really pushing for background downloading. So it's just one of those things. It's like, they just, you feel like they get it. You feel like they're listening to the community, they're using these channels they've created, and they're putting that back into the system. And so, you know, when you ask for something and you get it, it feels like you're a part of the process. And I think that Microsoft is really succeeding with the Xbox in that capacity.
So the website must be a lot of work for you to undertake, especially when you considered it at first to be a very small project and now it's just expanded beyond your wildest imagination. Are you still enjoying the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are definitely enjoying the process. Like, I mean, our site's only been live for about 2 months now, and it's definitely been a whirlwind. But, I mean, there's no learning experience, I think, that replaces the learning experience that Steve and I are going through right now. And, you know, we both work in the computer field. We both come from development backgrounds. We still do a little bit of development in our day jobs. Steve more than me. But, you know, it's really just to be a part of the process, to be a part of the community, and just to provide something that so many people seem to enjoy and find valuable. It's great. And as long as it keeps being fun and as long as people keep, you know, valuing it, I see no reason to stop, you know, doing things for it. It's been very positive.
Yeah, I was really surprised just a lot of the email and stuff we get. It's just really nice to, you know, open the inbox and you know, we get a few when there's problems, but we get a lot of people just saying, you know, this is great, you know, I love the site, I told my friends, it's just, like he says, it's great to be part of that community. It's great to be able to kind of give back and just, you know, with our simple idea. And that's, like, the most rewarding part for me is just being able to be out there in the community.
So when you've registered and you've got your blog running, it's actually from the perspective of the Xbox 360 telling everybody what you've been doing. It's not sort of from yourself. It's the Xbox 360 console, which is a bit spooky in itself. And especially if you've been neglecting your console and it tells you off. But who actually comes up with the quips it comes out with?
Most of the quips I've actually written. Steve, you know, has provided a bunch of them as well. But the initial runs, you know, I just make. We're also starting to get people now who are sending in saying, you know, hey, it'd be funny if my Xbox said this. And, you know, and a lot of times I can't use exactly what they put together because, you know, they don't really know how it really gets all stuck together inside the processing. But I'm normally able to take a lot of those concepts and work them into new entries, which is a lot of fun. So there's still a lot of expansion we can do with what the sayings are. You know, we have a version that's male and a version that's female. And there's not a lot of difference between what they say, just, you know, he, she, and his, her, and things like that. But yeah, I mean, we're always looking to expand it. Anyone in the community has something that they'd like it to say, they can just email us and we'll take a look at it and try and fit it in where it's appropriate.
One of the newest things you've had is reputation, actually showing you if someone's had a good or a bad feedback. So there must be a lot of information still that Microsoft provides that your website still can implement. What other things do you think we could maybe possibly see in the future?
Well, we're kind of almost pushing everything out now. We don't get a lot of stuff. We actually get pretty much what's on your gamer card. You'll notice that you do get rep in the format of stars, and so we just hadn't implemented that. I think the one thing that we're working on changing in the near future is when you change your gamer picture, we'll have information on that. But I think everything else we're trying to get as much possible out there. We want to figure out if we add something, even if just to add it, we don't want just to add it. We want to be able to, you know, have something compelling to go along with it. I mean, there's a lot of little gadgets and stuff we could add to the site. We just don't want to overshadow the blog and make what we add good, not just to get it up and get it running. So that's kind of our main goal, is to focus on the blog, and if we do add something, make it interesting.
Yeah, the only other tiny little bit of information we could possibly do is, you know, right now we say, you've played this game and you've gotten this achievement, you know, and you've gained this much gamer score. There's a little more granularity that we could possibly work into there. So, you know, you've gotten this many out of this many achievements and things like that, where we can kind of like, you know, maybe make the information we're giving just a tiny bit more detailed. We're playing with some stuff like that as well. But, you know, like Steve says, we really want it to sort of, we want it to be conversational. So if the Xbox goes into too much level of detail, it's going to lose the sort of effect that it's conversational, you know, and then it just becomes a big stats dump. So it's kind of purposefully a little bit vague, because, you know, when you're talking to somebody, you don't say, you know, I got one achievement in this, and that's one out of two, and 400 points out of 600, and, you know, and all these little stats that you could throw in there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense from a blogging perspective that you would write that way. So that kind of also is part of our design process, is, you know, we look at, well, is this going to make a compelling blog entry or not, or is it just a big stats dump? And we kind of want to stay away from that at this point.
With all this information that you could provide on the site, as you were saying, there is also possibly the risk of having too much on there where people think, oh, no, I don't want people to know that. So could there be a feature in the future where people could have their own profiles and select what is and isn't on the blog?
What we're kind of looking at in the future and we're kind of running to now is any idea of customizability for your blog where you could log in and customize pieces of it, or, you know, add comments and whatnot. The problem with that we're running into is we have no way of knowing if you actually own your gamer tag, because gamer tags are all verified via the Microsoft Passport, which is now Live ID, and the community developers don't have any way of tagging to that currently. So that's a big limitation, and we don't want to have to deal with, you know, trying to, you know, get into disputes if you own the gamer tag, or coming up with really clever ways to kind of verify ownership. So right now, and that would be, anything we do would be manual, would be tough for 30,000 people. So right now we're kind of thinking about all the customizability, like comments and removing and putting in gadgets and displaying certain things, and kind of thinking about that and kind of putting it down for later. And then when we do get the ability to do that, if we get the ability to do that, we will start rolling that type of stuff out, and adding friends and all that type of stuff. So it's on the agenda, but we just have limitations to get there.
Yeah, I mean, and outside of that, the level of customization is something that we're still wrestling with as well. You know, we've talked in the dev blog about possibly adding premium membership and what that's going to mean. And people have talked about wanting to do things like, you know, different types of voices and things like that. But, you know, we really have to kind of decide, you know, what the best value is going to be. And like Steve says, we have to get up over this ownership thing and, you know, maybe then allow people to add their friends or, you know, change the gadgets that appear on the page, things like that. But as far as, you know, being able to customize, you know, what your blog can actually say, or, you know, I don't want them to talk about reputation, you know, that kind of stuff, I don't know, you know, that if it's in the feed, it's pretty much fair game. Microsoft has privacy settings, so if you don't want your Xbox to blog about you, you can go into the dashboard and you can turn off you know, the gamer feed so that no one can see what you're playing. So outside of that, though, we're pretty much taking the opinion that what's in the gamer feed is fair game for display at this point.
So what has been the press reaction to what you're doing? It must have been quite phenomenal to in such a short time to be so popular.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to get picked up by a lot of the big blogs and the big sort of news aggregators just from a traffic perspective. It was kind of bad because we had to somehow shuffle all that traffic around, but yeah, it's been great, and it's really inspiring to get all the great feedback and to see all the good positive press. And it's I really like it when people talk about how they think it's creepy, because I mean the whole idea of this is predicated on the concept of a blogject and how would you act if the devices that you use could communicate with you and make judgments about you, and would you change your behavior? Would it cause you to think differently about the way you interact with that device? And it seems like it does. In a lot of the links that people give, they say it's kind of creepy. They find themselves, before they go to bed, they jump on and play a quick arcade game so their blog isn't empty. And so, to know that that's happening is really exciting, because it means that we're really onto something, and that we've really created something that people find compelling, and that's the biggest reward.
And Microsoft must love you for that, making sure they're on their Xbox 360 every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point, is, how is this type of an interface going to play out from a marketing perspective and from, the perspective of convincing people to do things? I mean, what if you walk by and, they roll out that little Xbox camera, right, and it comes out this fall. What if that sits on your TV and every time you walk by, your Xbox throws a little message up on your TV and says, hey, why don't you stop for a second and play a quick, minute of Geometry Wars or something? How would that affect you? Would you stop? Maybe all you needed is that little prompt to say, hey, stop and play with me for a second. And just that little bit is enough to change the way people behave around these devices. And I think that's a really interesting thing to experiment with.
And make you very nervous at the same time. So what are your favorite games on the Xbox 360? Because one of the features, again, on the website is showing you your most played games. And I noticed number two for me was Uno, which was quite scary for me, because it is an Xbox Live Arcade game. But although it is very good, number two, what was I thinking? How have I got it so high? But for you, what are your favorite Xbox 360 games so far?
I've been obviously playing a lot of Oblivion still. I'm just pretty much obsessed with that series and that game, and so if I get a good gaming time chunk set aside, I concentrate on that. I mean, Uno's kind of a funny one, because I gave a bunch of crap to Uno before it came out, and I'm just saying, Uno requires no skill, it's just a card game, but it's one of those games that you can jump in with some friends and just kind of, hang out, and there's no pressure to, duck from sniping, and it's just you just hang out, you just talk, you play some cards. It's silly, but it's it's lots of customizability in the games. You can play for one game, 0 points, 100 points, 50 points. So it's I don't know, Uno for some reason I like playing now a lot when I give it all that crap. So yeah, I play my Oblivion, and if I need a quick game, I throw an arcade game in, and then the rest of the time I'm just kind of working through playing different games. So
yeah, I think for me, probably the best game I've played so far is Ghost Recon and Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter. And I think I just like it because I was never really a big tactical shooter guy, but there's just something about the environment of that game I think that's really, really great. And the multiplayer is just so much fun with that. And we've had some really great games. We had a couple of nights where we had 5 or 6 people on, some of the Xbox MVPs and stuff, and we just had some amazing games, and it was just so much fun. I think that's definitely been the highlight of the Xbox for me. I'm also a big racing game fan. I mean, my favorite launch title was Need for Speed. I played that a lot before we had written the blog, so it doesn't appear at all on my most played games, but I played Need for Speed Most Wanted pretty much every single day for a couple of hours after I got my Xbox. And now I'm playing a lot of Burnout Revenge too. I've always liked the Burnout series. So I kind of got a little bit of everything there, but from the Uno perspective, my own Uno perspective, a bunch of friends and I here in Chicago, we'd always get together and play Uno. We actually prefer Spider-Man Uno, because it has the Spidey Sense card where you get to look at someone else's deck, and as part of the game. So we've been playing a lot of Uno. So I was always like, oh great, Uno's coming out, and everyone would be like, Uno sucks. It takes no skill, just like Steve says. but yeah, it is a great game. It's so mindless. You can sit in, but then there's just those moments in Uno where you're just like, oh snap, I just like slammed you with this card, and everyone starts laughing. And so it's just a fun game. It's a really fun game.
And do both of you have high definition?
Yes. Yeah. We both do. I have a Sony 36-inch widescreen. I don't know my model number. I'm not that cool, but it's a CRT. So it's a big old 400-pound beast that sits on a entertainment center.
Yeah, but CRTs are still very good even now.
Yeah, I mean for the size of the room we have and the different angles that you look at the TV, we had to go CRT.
I pretty much have the exact same thing, I think it's a slightly newer model. I think I just bought it a little later than him. But yeah, I mean, I prefer CRT over, I don't like the pictures. It's just a personal preference. Like, I don't care for the DLP and LCD pictures as much. I just don't think the black levels are there and whatnot. So, I love my big old 400-pound TV.
Yeah, I think if I was to go out and get something, you know, tomorrow, I'd probably get like a 42-inch, one of those, you know, multi-mirror DLPs, though. I think they've really seemed to come up in quality and for size and price. I don't know, I'd definitely probably pick one of those suckers up, though.
So, HD DVD, are you going to go for that, or is that something you're going to hold back on?
I was a big early adopter of DVD. I pretty much got a player as soon as I could, and I ran a small DVD like a review site, which mainly pointed other people's reviews. And then me and Trapper and a few friends started a team DVD review site. It was called TeamDVD.com, and which is now owned by some company or something. But we would review DVDs as a team and kind of talk about them, so you'd have different perspectives on the DVD. So we were big proponents of DVD, and we kind of early adopters, and I just don't, with HD DVD and Blu-ray, I just don't see the value added right now. I've seen the quality of them, and it's there, but it's like, I don't think it's a big enough jump. I don't think that it's going to convince me to, you know, run out and get a player. If I do get a player, maybe I'll rent the 8 high definition versions and stuff, but I'm just not going to, you know, redo my whole collection in HDVD right away.
Yeah, for me, I think I agree with Bill Gates. I think it's, you know, this is really the last format war. Because in the end of the day, you know, I watch most of my movies now in HD via my Comcast cable on demand. And you can get the movie, you know, right over the cable wire on demand in HD, and it looks great. So, you know, if things start going that route, or they keep going that route, I just, you know, don't really see a need for the format. But, you know, like I say, if there comes up with a reason to buy it, I'll buy it. But I'm not really going to be there day one with my HD DVD player for 360 probably.
So I suppose with the PlayStation 3 and one of the major things they're pushing about is the Blu-ray playback. Has that put you off because you're not so interested in the high-definition format war?
Well, for me, I mean, I'm just not interested in formats in general. You know, Sony tried to sell their PSP with the whole UMD format. And every time you turn around, it seems Sony's trying to introduce a new format of something, whether it's a new format of memory or a new format of CD with the mini disc or a new format of DVD with Blu-ray or, you know, and they've always just been about sort of controlling that distribution hardware. And I don't know, I just don't buy it. I just don't think it's that important, and therefore it's not really a factor. You know, if I buy a PlayStation 3, it'll be because, you know, some game comes out. I mean, every time I go into Best Buy, I'm about, you know, a sliver away from buying a PlayStation 2 just so I can play Guitar Hero. You know, it bums me out that Guitar Hero isn't on the 360 yet, but you know, and that's the thing. If you just create compelling games, that's what sells game consoles. You know, they tried to sell the PSP because of the UMDs, and that's failing as well. So, you know, you gotta make good games. I bought a DS. I could have bought a PSP, but I bought a DS because the gameplay was so compelling. There were games on there you just couldn't play on any other system. And I think people are gonna see that with the Nintendo Wii. There's just games you're going to be able to play on there. You can't play on any other system. So why would I buy a PSP, which has the exact same gaming experience I get on my Xbox? You know, I wanted something different. So so I think Nintendo's in a really good place because of that.
Yeah, when I look at the whole Blu-ray thing or any feature on a console, I just have to think, you know, how's this going to make games better? And there's really no way that a Blu-ray drive can to make a game better. It's added space. Worst comes to worst, they'll have to make, you know, console games on multiple DVDs if they're, you know, large, you know, role-playing experiences or have lots of movie files. I mean, and when I think back to games that are on multiple, you know, CDs, like when I think back to like Final Fantasy VII on the original PlayStation was like 3 CDs, I don't think back, oh man, I had to change discs, you know, twice. I thought, you know, it was a great game, it was a cinematic experience, it was an RPG that I enjoyed. I don't think about the disc swapping. I don't think that's gonna really hinder any console that comes out that has, a smaller space. They're just gonna figure out ways around it. It's not gonna hurt the games at all.
I mean, certainly for anyone who's owned systems in the past, like the Commodore 64, and had the joy of watching the cassette take an hour to load the game and then fail, multiple discs doesn't really bother me either. So Nintendo Wii, the name may be a bit on the unusual side, but as a console, it does look intriguing. So do you think you might be getting the Wii?
I'll probably get one. I don't know. It comes down to compelling gameplay, but it just seems like a lot of fun, and I could see myself picking one up. I mean, I got a DS for the same reason. It just looked like a lot of fun. It looked like there were things that you could do on there you couldn't do anywhere else. And I wanted to be a part of that. So I got a DS, but, you know, I think the Wii is going to be the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably end up getting one. The only thing I'm a little worried about the Wii is I didn't get a chance to play it at E3. I just think that it'll fill that niche of like the party games and that kind of experience where, you know, you kind of get on, you show some friends, you swing the controller around. But for like, you know, the long-term gaming and whatnot, I don't know if it's going to offer that same experience where you can just kind of crash on your couch or your floor and just, you know, sit there and motionless and, you know, zone out to like, you know, an arcade game or like a online game. I don't think it'll have that same experience. I think it'll be one of those things where I pull out, have some fun with, show it to people, you know, be silly, and then put it away, and then go back and play my, you know, 360 or, you know, whatever, you know, console I'm playing. But I think that it's gonna be neat at first and in small doses, and it's gonna have some really one or two compelling games. But I think for the majority, it's just gonna be like kind of gimmicky to an extent and just kind of, you know, limited. But that's just kind of without playing it.
What was your first gaming experience? Can you remember what it was on?
If you go back all the way to like handhelds, like the little Tiger football and whatnot, I remember playing at some people's houses and stuff, and I was really into that. But the first console I owned was an Odyssey 2 instead of Atari, which I loved my Odyssey 2. It had the keyboard on the front, and the coolest thing about it that really separated from the Atari for me was that they still clone the games, like they had their Pac-Man clone, which they got sued for, but you could actually, with the keyboard and whatnot, you could design your own levels, so you could, like, in little, you know, Pac-Man mazes, you could turn walls on and off, so you could build your own levels, and they had, you know, 4 or 5 games that you could build your own levels, so I was always really into making games and stuff, so I spent more time actually, like, building levels and stuff and trying to manipulate the gameplay than actually playing the game, so I loved my Odyssey, too.
Yeah, my first gaming experience was on an Atari 2600. The first game I ever remember really playing a lot was E.T. on the Atari, and I got it for Christmas, and I remember opening it up and thinking it was the movie, and then, you know, it was, no, it's this Atari game, and it was like, okay, well, and then just getting through over that whole experience of what is gaming and what do you, you know, how do you use this, and then from there, it sort of went from Atari to Apple computers, so I did a lot of, you know, gaming on there, and did some Commodore 64 gaming, like Raid Over Moscow type stuff. But then I also remember, you know, really, my first IBM PC was a Tandy 1000, and I played Sierra games on there, so Sierra Adventure games, like Space Quest and King's Quest and all those things. And I just remember that was really my, like, moment of gaming where it was like I suddenly realized how that they were so compelling just from a story perspective and just from an immersion perspective and how you could spend 8 hours just continuously playing this one game and trying to get past this one little piece of it and trying to put the puzzle pieces together and, you know, those are some of my fondest memories of down in my basement, huddled around a little IBM clone playing adventure games in monochrome.
Do you think gaming today competes with what you had then?
I think it does. I think, you know, for me personally, times have changed just from an attention perspective. You know, so I have a family and I have a job, and you know, so I can't really spend my entire weekend in the basement sitting in front of a computer like I could when I was in high school. But I think that it does compete. I think the experiences that you have now are so much more connected. You know, you didn't really have that deep multiplayer experience. I mean, I played a game for probably a year solid called Planetside, and it was an MMO, and it was a multi-massive player first-person shooter. And, you know, just the experience of being in a game with 200 other people all trying to accomplish the same goal, all working together. You get these ad hoc leadership hierarchies. You have this massive difference in skill sets. And I get goosebumps just thinking about playing that game when I was playing it. You know, I kind of got tired of it just because, like anything, it becomes monotonous. But, I mean, to be a part of those types of experiences and to have these memories of doing these things that you can't distinguish from memories that happen in the real world. I mean, you know, that what it feels like to, you know, to travel across the continent, to parachute into a tower, to fight, you know, tooth and nail, to get to the building, to break into the building, to get into the basement, to hold a hack on the building, to, you know, to succeed and everyone to be so happy and to have those experiences in gaming. I think that's something that you didn't get so much back when gaming was first starting out, and you definitely have that now with the multiplayer experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I a lot of people are, you know, all about nostalgia and the older games and whatnot, but I just remember when we were, you know, playing Nintendo or playing one of the old systems and just thinking how cool it would be is if, you know, I could play you at your house and you know, we could play multiplayer games, you know, and it's just like, when these things evolve, it's just for the better. I mean, I just think that, like, games keep getting better, and I know people are like, well, you know, we're missing that simple gameplay, and we're missing the stuff that, you know, where games came from, and I don't think that's true. I think you can still find the games that have the simple gameplay, and I think that we still need the big cinematic games. I think it's for the better. I think games are evolving in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a simpler game experience, we can play, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was for.
Thank you very much for the interview, guys. It's been a pleasure. And if you haven't been already, 360voice.com, fantastic website. I suggest you register and use the functionality as soon as you can.
All right, thanks for having us.